Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour, horror. Later on, an early broadcast from the suspense series called The Doctor Prescribed Death, but first it's Inner Sanctum, with a great radio actress Mercedes McCambridge in the title role in a CBS broadcast from the 4th of April 1949 called Death Wears a Lonely Smile.
Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in. I want you to see the changes we've made around here. Very, very smart. Now, this new morbid motif was designed by those southern decorators, Autopsy and Eva. This three-part section of sofa was made especially for the wife of Harry the Hatchet Man. You see, Harry left his wife in pieces, so naturally we let the chip and dales fall where they may. Now, here's our new dropped living room, just freshly dug. It's for rent, a real bargain. All you have to do is slab on a down payment. Well, now let's get to tonight's torturous tale. Find your places and make yourselves comfortable before we begin. As Harry the Hatchet Man says, we're not seating anyone before the first act's curtain falls. It's dusk, and a cold wind whips through the burial ground, stirring the leafless branches into wordless whispers of dead, forgotten voices. Amid the gravestones, the big man with a bloodied gash in his forehead stands, hatless, his massive ape-like arms hanging limply at his side, his eyes set in a lost, vacant stare. The big man remains there, transfixed, as the young woman in black comes out of the shadows behind him.
Can I help you?
Where did you come from?
Oh, I was over there putting flowers on my father's grave, and I saw you. You're standing here, and you seemed lost, so I...
Lola.
What?
I've been waiting for you, Lola.
Oh, I'm not...
I knew you'd come if I waited, Lola. I knew you would.
But my name isn't Lola.
I waited so long. I waited every day.
I told you I'm not Lola. You've mistaken me. My name is Carol.
Carol?
That's right. Carol Finley.
But Lola said she'd come. She promised me. I need her.
Who is Lola?
Lola's my friend. She never made fun of me because I'm so big. Lola never laughed like all the others, like all those other ones who were so mean. What's your name?
I told you, it's Carol. What's yours?
Walter.
Walter, you'd better let me take you home.
Home?
Yes. Where do you live?
Why, I don't know.
There's something the matter with you. Yes, you're hurt, that cut on your forehead.
Cut?
Yes. Look, I'll take you to my place. My mother has a rooming house, and you can stay there until you feel better.
No, I can't go. I must wait for Lola. I promised I'd wait
Walter.
For her.
Walter?
Yeah?
Was her name Lola Douglas?
Yeah, Lola Douglas.
There's no use in your waiting.
Oh, you mustn't talk like that. She'll be here. She will.
She's already here. That gravestone there, look at it. Lola Douglas. Died March 6, 1948. There you are, Walter. Now, that bandage will do for a while.
You're nice to me, Carol. You're like Lola. You're not afraid of me, are you?
Of course not. Why should I be afraid?
Because I'm so big. I remember when I was in school, a boy made fun of me. I grabbed his arm and I told him to stop. He just laughed at me. I didn't mean to hurt him, but I broke his arm. I just squeezed a little and it broke. Then they were all afraid of me.
They shouldn't have laughed at you.
I like you. But I can't stay here.
Oh, it's perfectly all right. I spoke to my mother, and she said that you can have my room for a few days, and I'll move downstairs.
Oh, I have to find Lola. I promised her.
Walter, try to understand. Lola is dead.
Oh, no.
She was buried over a year ago.
Oh, that isn't true. I saw Lola last week. I spoke to her.
All right, Walter. All right. And tomorrow you can start looking for her again. But now you must get some rest. You just lie down here and I'll...
Carol, why are you looking at me like that?
This was on the table among the things you took out of your pocket.
What is it?
A newspaper clipping.
I didn't have a clipping in my pocket.
It's dated March 7, 1948. Woman found brutally crushed to death. Victim identified as Lola Douglas.
Carol, I just stopped by for a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Carol Finley was here.
Carol gave me her... Lola.
Lola?
I knew you weren't dead.
Oh, my name isn't Lola.
I knew they were lying all the time, Lola.
Now, I'm Gladys Hart. I live down the hall.
They were trying to keep me from you. Come in, Lola.
No, let go of my hand.
Come with me, Lola.
Oh, please, let go. Oh, my hand, you're hurting me.
I wouldn't hurt you, Lola. You know I wouldn't.
Let go.
You mustn't talk so loud, Lola. They'll hear you. No. They'll think I'm hurting you.
Oh, please. Please let me out of here.
Don't try to get away from me, Lola. I might hurt you. I don't want to hurt you, Lola, but you might make me.
Stop.
You see, I'm hurting you. You're making me, and I don't want to.
Who is it? Stop.
Who what do you want?
Well, I was downstairs and I heard someone scream.
Who are you?
Carol's mother, Mrs. Finley. The scream came from this room, I'm sure of it.
Oh, no, Mrs. Finley, nobody...
There she is, on the floor in there.
Huh?
Get out of my way. Gladys, what have you done to her?
Well, she wasn't here before. Lola was here, but now she's gone.
Oh. Gladys, are you all right?
Oh, Mrs. Finley.
Who is she?
Keep him away from me. Keep him away.
Now, you're all right, my dear. I'm here.
He tried to kill me.
No, I wouldn't hurt anybody.
Here's your pocketbook, Gladys. He probably wanted your money.
I don't want money.
There's money in it. How much did you have, Gladys?
Well, I just cashed a check. $68. It was your rent.
20, 40, 60, 5, 8. 68. Well, it's all here. Well, come on now, dear, and I'll take you to your room.
All right.
And you, I want you to clear out of here.
No, I can't go. You're
getting out, you understand? You're getting out.
I can't go. Lola's coming back. I promised her I'd wait, and I'm staying here until she comes.
Carol.
What is it, Mom? What's the matter?
I can't find Gladys. Her bed wasn't slept in. Did you see her?
No.
Well, I went to her room and she wasn't there. I had a feeling when you brought him home the other night. I had a feeling I should have turned him away. He's killed Gladys.
Oh, Mom, stop it. Stop talking like that.
Well, he tried it yesterday.
No, he didn't. Mom, he's just mixed up. You've got to try to understand him. Please take it easy. Gladys probably left for work early.
No, sir, she didn't leave this house alive. I was in her room. He's done something to her. He's hidden her body.
Mommy, I don't believe he'd do a thing like that.
Then what about Lola Douglas? She was murdered a year ago. You told me about that yourself.
All right, I did. But there's no proof that Walter killed her. Mom, I understand him. I'll go up and talk to him.
No, you won't. You're staying right here. I'll do the talking to him. I've got to get him out of this house before we're all murdered. You've got to get out of here.
Please, Mrs. Finley, don't make me go. Lola'll come back.
Lola Douglas was murdered a year ago.
That's not true. Lola's alive. I saw her last week.
She was murdered by you.
No, I wouldn't hurt Lola.
Well, you killed her the same way you killed Gladys.
Oh, you shouldn't say things like that, Mrs. Finley.
You took Gladys out of here last night and murdered her.
No, Mrs. Finley, I didn't leave. I was waiting for Lola.
You're a monster, a horrible, crazy monster.
You're saying mean things to me, Mrs. Finley.
But I want you out of my house. I want you out right now.
You're not like Carol. Carol's nice. Carol said I could stay here in her room.
Yes, but not if you don't pay.
Pay?
Oh, I know you have no money. You can't stay here another moment unless you pay. And I want a month's rent in advance. Now, what do you say to that?
All right, Mrs. Finley.
And the quicker you get out of here...
Here's your money.
Well, where did you...
Is this enough for a month in advance, Mrs. Finley? Is $68 enough?
$68, Carol. Here, look. He gave me $68.
I don't understand it, Mom. Yesterday, he didn't have a penny in his pocket.
But don't you see what this proves? It's just as I told you. He's murdered Gladys. That's exactly what she had in her pocketbook last night. $68.
Sergeant Pierce, 12th Precinct.
Sergeant, this is Mrs. Finley, 529 Elm Street. You'd better come over right away.
Finley, 529 Elm. What's the trouble, lady?
Well, one of my roomers, Gladys Hart, she's missing.
Missing? Well, we don't handle that, lady.
Oh, but listen,
Switch you over to missing person.
Wait, just a minute, please.
Yeah?
Well, this woman, she's not just missing. She's been murdered.
Now, look, lady, which is it? She missing or murdered?
The both. She hasn't been in her room all night. She had $68 in her pocketbook and... Ah!
Hello? Hello?
You!
Good afternoon, hello. Mrs. Finley.
Hey, what's going on there? Hello?
I'm sorry I troubled you, officer. I made a mistake. Gladys Hart's alive. She just walked in.
Who's there?
It's Carol, Walter.
Oh, come in, Carol.
Did I disturb you?
Oh, I was listening to the music on the radio. It's nice music, isn't it, Carol?
Yes, Walter, very pleasant.
Lola likes music just like that, too.
Walter?
Yeah?
I came up to apologize for the way Mom acted to you.
Mrs. Finley said mean things to me.
Well, Mom didn't understand.
Mrs. Finley said I killed that girl. I didn't kill her.
Yes, we know that now. Gladys came in a little while ago. She stayed at a friend's house overnight. Walter? Where did you get the money you gave Mom?
Well, it was in my pocket. I found the $68 in my pocket.
But it was more than $68.
More?
Yes, Mom was so excited when you gave it to her, she forgot to count it. But you gave her $85.
Oh, I only had $68.
You must have made a mistake. You had $85. You gave Mom $17 too much. So here, she told me to give you back the $17.
Oh, you keep it, Carol. You're nice to me.
No, Walter, it's yours. Please take it.
Carol...
Yes?
This money, would you let me take you to dinner?
Well, you see, I don't...
No, you wouldn't be ashamed to go with me because I'm so big. Because people would look at me and laugh.
Of course I wouldn't be ashamed.
Then you'll go?
Yes, Walter, I'd be very glad to go with you. I'll just run downstairs and get my things. You meet me out in front of the house in 10 minutes.
All right, Carol, I'll meet you. We'll have a nice time.
Yes, Walter, I'm sure we will.
Here is additional information on the murder this afternoon in Washington Park. An empty purse seems to be the clue to the brutal crime. The murdered woman had $85 in bills when she left the house last night. According to the police, the murder was undoubtedly committed by a large man with great power in his hands. Local and state authorities are conducting an extensive search.
Hey, stop playing the music. The music was so nice. And they stopped playing it.
Carol.
Yes, Mom, what's the matter?
Oh, I've been looking all over the house for you. You're all right?
Of course I'm all right.
Why are you putting on your coat?
I'm going out to dinner.
Out to dinner?
Yes, with Walter.
Him? Oh, thank heavens I got here in time.
Mom, what are you talking about?
He's a murderer.
Oh, you're not going to start that all over again, are
you? Well, it just came over the radio. A woman was killed last night in Washington Park.
But that doesn't prove that Walter is a murderer.
It does. The radio said the woman had $85 in her pocketbook.
She had what?
$85. Well, that's what he gave me this afternoon, $85. That's what he killed that woman for.
No, Mom, I can't believe it.
Oh, that's how he suddenly had the money to pay the rent. And the radio said the woman was crushed to death by a man who was big and powerful.
Big and powerful?
It's him. Oh, and you would have been the next, Carol. Where is he now?
Well, I was supposed to meet him outside the house. I suppose he's out there waiting for me. No.
Oh, that man's a lunatic, a crazy killing lunatic.
Mom, what are we going to do?
Well, you stay here in this room now and don't leave it.
What about you?
Well, I'm going downstairs to call the police. I'll be back in a few minutes. And remember, no matter what happens, don't leave this room. Operator, the police. Quick, get me the police.
One moment, please.
Hello, Mrs.
Oh!
You're calling the police?
No,
you're
no,
I... You're gonna tell on me.
No, you're wrong. I wasn't going to...
Mom, what took you so long? I was...
Hello, Carol.
Hello, Walter.
I was waiting for you, Carol.
Well, I'm not ready yet.
You got your hat and coat on.
Well, can't we wait just a little longer?
You're afraid. You're afraid to go to dinner with me.
No.
Otherwise, you'd go with me right now.
Well, I... All right, Walter, all right. I'll do just as you like. We'll go right now.
Carol, why did you change?
Me change? I don't know what you mean.
I don't think you like me anymore.
Oh, but I do like you, Walt.
You want to get away from me, I can tell. You don't want to be with me.
But I came out with you. I'm going to dinner with you.
But you don't want to. I can tell by the way you act. You keep pulling away from me.
Wait, wait.
What is it?
Did you really want me to like you, Walt?
Yeah, very much.
Then I tell you what... This florist shop here. You go in there. You buy me some flowers.
Some flowers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. Well, what kind?
Oh, any kind. And I'll wait here while you do it.
No, you come with me. You pick them up.
Oh, but I want you to surprise me.
Oh, I don't want you to be alone. You might run away from me.
No, I wouldn't do a thing like that.
Well, if you want some flowers, you got to come in the shop with me.
All right, Walter. I'll go with you.
Good evening. What can I do for you?
What kind of flowers do you want, Carol?
Roses. Oh, yes, roses.
Roses are very nice.
A dozen?
Yes.
Well, I'll have them for you.
Oh, miss.
Yes?
Miss, I have to make a phone call. I wonder if I could...
Well,
just...
there's a pay booth over there behind the fern.
Oh, thank you. I'll just be a minute, Walter.
But, Carol,
you wait here for the flowers. I'll be right back. Operator, get me the police.
One moment, please.
Sergeant Pierce, 12th Precinct.
Oh, listen to me carefully. I don't have much time. My name is Carol Finley, and the man who murdered that woman in Washington Park last night is with me.
Where are you?
In Kramer's florist shop on 6th Street, but we're leaving here in a minute. He's taking me to dinner at the Black Grotto down the block.
Black Grotto, I got you.
Please, hurry.
Don't worry, we'll get there in no time.
Oh, you have the flowers, Walter. Oh, they're very pretty.
Who did you call, Carol?
Why, I called Mom.
You talked to Mrs. Finley?
Yes, I just wanted to let her know where I'd be so that she wouldn't worry.
You talked to her?
Yes, I just told her that I did. Come on, Walter, I'm hungry.
All right, Carol. Wait, Carol, I'll call a taxi.
We're just going to the Black Grotto. We don't need a taxi. It's just down the street there.
I changed my mind, Carol. We're not going to the Black Grotto. I'm taking you to a nicer place. Much nicer.
Walter, why did you take me out here?
There's something in this cemetery I want to show you.
Walter, please, let's go back to town.
We won't be long. It's right here. This is what I wanted to show you.
It's an empty grave.
Yes, Carol. And we have the flowers to put on it.
But no one's in there. It's empty.
You'll be there, Carol.
Walter?
It's for you.
Oh, you don't want to hurt me, Walter. I'm your friend, remember?
No, you're bad. You're like all the rest of them. I thought you were nice, but you're not.
Don't you remember? I tried to help you.
You didn't call Mrs. Finley from the flower shop?
Yes, I did, Walter. I spoke to Mom.
That's not the truth. You couldn't talk to her. Mrs. Finley is dead.
She's what?
I killed her. She was going to tell the police about me. I put my hands around her neck and I squeezed and... she was dead.
I
put her in the cellar. Now I've got to kill you.
No, Walter, wait. Wait, if you do anything to me, there won't be anybody left to help you find Lola.
Lola?
Yes.
Lola?
Lee, yes, Walter, I can help you find Lola. I think I know where she's hiding.
Lola's dead.
No.
She laughed. She laughed at me. She said I was crazy, a big crazy fool. That's what she said. I thought she was my friend, but she wasn't. She was mean. She laughed at me. She was mean like all the rest. They all laughed at me.
I wouldn't laugh at you, Walter. I wouldn't.
I hate it when people laugh at me. I want to hurt them just like I want to hurt you, because you're laughing at me now.
I'm not laughing. I'm not.
You are.
No, please, don't. Let's go,
stop,
please.
Stop laughing. Stop
please,
laughing
Walter,
at
don't.
Me. If you stopped laughing, don't. I wouldn't have to hurt you. But you won't stop. You
don't.
Keep on. You. Lola, make them stop. Lola, please make them stop. They're hurting me.
You all right, miss?
Yes, officer. I'm all right.
That was a close call you had. You didn't turn up at the Black Grotto. I checked with the florist. She saw him take you into a cab outside her shop. Lucky thing I got out here in time.
Yes.
He sure was a big guy, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. A big guy who didn't want people to laugh at him.
Well, that closes the lid on tonight's little coffin of curious characters. And Walter certainly proved a point. The bigger they are, the harder they fall into a grave. Say, Carol certainly had a narrow escape, didn't she? The poor girl almost died, laughing. You know, that's the trouble with most people. No sense of humor. Some of them just can't take a choke. All right, so my gags leave you morbid. You didn't want to sleep tonight anyway. Oh, did you?
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 4th, 1949 on CBS. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Bela Lugosi, the man who made Dracula famous on the silver screen in 1931, stars in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. From the year, he was in four motion pictures, One Body Too Many, Return of the Ape Man, Voodoo Man, and The Return of the Vampire. He's joined by seasoned CBS radio actors in The Doctor Prescribed Death, broadcast live on February 2nd, 1943.
This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Our star tonight is Bela Lugosi, playing the part of Professor Antonio Basile, psychologist. The story is by J. Donald Wilson, who calls it The Doctor Prescribed Death. If you have been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. This series of tales is calculated to intrigue you, stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so it is with the Doctor Prescribed Death and Bela Lugosi's performance. We again hope to keep you in suspense. Professor Antonio Basile has a theory, but let him tell you about it.
As a psychologist, I have worked out a theory. A theory I know to be sound. I contend that a person who has decided to kill himself can very easily be turned from this desire to the desire of taking the life of another. I can prove my theory. And if necessary, that is exactly what I will do.
Yes, Professor Antonio Basile has a theory, but only a theory. And he's worried about what his publisher will say. So he visits the editor, whose name is Hellman. Hellman finishes the manuscript and tosses it on the desk. Professor Basile leans forward eagerly and...
Well, Hellman, what do you think?
Professor Basile, it's purely conjecture, simply a theory, and I wouldn't advise publishing it.
I worked on that theory for a long time. I'm positive of it. I know it'll work.
Suppose it will. What good is it? What good have you accomplished if you can prove it'll work?
Are you laughing at me, Hellman?
It's so silly. An ordinary human being has suffered reverses. He's sick of it all. He wants to leave it all behind. And you say he can be changed to want to kill someone else.
I do. Self-destruction and the destruction of other life are closely related in the mind. The dividing line is very thin.
It's ridiculous.
And you won't publish it?
Granger would fire me.
Why?
He told me that, in his opinion, you should be in the asylum.
Mr. Granger said that? Does he think I'm insane?
How do I know?
Hellman, Mr. Granger didn't say that. It's you who thinks I'm crazy. You've never liked me. For some reason, you are trying to tear me down. Well, we'll see, Mr. Hellman. We'll see.
Now, wait a minute.
I'll show you whether my works are illogical. I'll show you whether I'm insane.
Oh, calm down.
I'm going to make you eat those words. I know you don't like me, but I'm going to prove that my theory is sound. Good night.
Wait a minute. Basile, wait.
You wait, Hellman. You wait.
Yes, wait, Hellman. Wait. Professor Basile, seething with resentment, rushes from the office and strides angrily down the street.
Insane, huh? I'll prove my theory. I'll find the subject. I'll find someone who wants to take his own life.
And so Basile goes home, late for dinner. He finds a note from his wife, Myra, saying she's decided to attend the opera and will be home around 11:30. Then Professor Basile gets an inspiration. He goes to the bridge over the deep canyon, the bridge called Suicide. And strangely enough, he hasn't long to wait. As he stands against the railing in the fog, a figure appears a few feet beyond, stops, peers. Sudden gesture, prepares to leap.
Don't do it! Wait a minute!
Listen.
Huh?
That's very silly.
Let go of me!
Oh, no. I couldn't do that. I need you.
I don't need you.
Don't you know this is against the law?
You're not an officer. You can't stop me.
It's 500 feet to those tracks below. Hard steel rails. And don't believe what they all tell you about not being conscious of what happened. You'd know.
people don't die instantly.
Let loose.
They lie in agony for minutes and sometimes for an hour. It's a horrible death, I know.
How do you know?
I'm a doctor.
Doctor?
Yes. I can tell you much simpler ways, much less painful ways, and quicker. You're a nice young girl, an intelligent girl. You wouldn't want it to happen this way. Maybe after I talk to you a while, you wouldn't want to do this at all.
No?
No. But come on. Let's talk it over. Maybe a few minutes' talk will change the entire picture for you.
What could you do to help me?
If you'll come, I'll tell you. There's a motive back of your wanting to do this, and I'd like to know what it is.
Nothing doing.
Haven't you any relatives? Any loved ones you'd like to do something for?
Yes.
Then if you'll talk with me for a while, maybe I can find my way clear to help those people.
You sound crazy.
Oh, no. I may be many things, but I'm not crazy.
All right, I'll... Where?
My apartment.
Let's go.
Well, here we are. Come in, please.
Well, what do you want to know?
Sit down first. Are you hungry?
No, I'm not that broke. It isn't poverty.
I knew that. Why did you come here?
Why? Why, because you talked me into it.
I see. You're not afraid of me?
Afraid? In my frame of mind. What could I lose?
Suppose I told you that I really brought you here to kill you.
Kill me?
You know, you're a very pretty girl, don't you?
Yeah. That doesn't always mean so much.
The right man, it might.
That's what I thought. But I found out it didn't mean a thing.
Ah. Then it was because of a man. I knew it.
Really? How did you guess?
I'm a student of psychology. I'm Professor Antonio Basile.
I see. And you want to know what makes me tick? You want to know the reason behind my action tonight?
That's right. I would like to know what happened to make you want to kill yourself. Suicide is a mental aberration.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what preceded the decision to destroy yourself. What you thought about until the moment I stopped you on the bridge.
What good will that do me?
You said you weren't broke, but you also said you had some loved ones you'd like to do something for.
I meant I wasn't broke to the point of being hungry. I have a few dollars. But you suggested help for someone in larger terms.
Yes, I did. Who is the loved one?
My mother.
You are her only means of support?
Yes.
And you intend to kill yourself?
Yes.
That's being selfish, isn't it?
Selfish?
Yes. You are concentrating solely on self.
You think so?
What else? The first law of human nature is self-preservation, right?
I suppose so.
The second law is the preservation of family.
Yeah?
So you decide to deny the first law and destroy yourself. And as a consequence, deny the second and leave your mother alone and in need. You indicate a form of insanity.
What would be normal?
To destroy the other person. The one who has done you wrong. Have you hurt him?
No.
Then the one who has done wrong should be the one to suffer. You have no legal recourse?
Legal recourse? No, I haven't, I'm sorry to say.
And you would kill yourself to let your poor mother suffer because of the wrong of another. Why shouldn't he be the one to suffer?
I suppose you're right. Why shouldn't he?
What happened after all? Why not tell me about it? Were you married?
No. Never seemed to find time to get around to marriage.
What's your name?
Gladys. Gladys Tanner.
How long had you known him?
Almost 4 years.
And you always thought he meant to marry you?
Yes. Until 3 weeks ago.
Yes?
On July 1st, he had to leave town for a week on business. Said he was going to Kansas City. When he came back, he seemed to be too busy to see me. Then a week ago, I found a snapshot along with several others in his desk in his home.
May I see it?
Certainly. It's a picture of him and another woman. But the picture was not taken in Kansas City.
It was?
No. It was taken on the beach at Atlantic City. And it's dated by the finisher, July 3rd. Since he returned, he's refused to see me. Yesterday, he finally said he didn't care to see me anymore. That I'd better forget him.
But it isn't so easy as that, is it?
No. I figured I'd done something. And blame myself.
Do you know this blonde woman in this snapshot?
No.
And it must be a woman he has met recently. You've known him for 4 years. I don't think you are to blame. He's the one in the wrong, and he should be made to suffer.
How?
You were going to kill yourself. Why should you? Kill him instead. He double-crossed you. He deserves it. Now, let me go a little deeper into the situation. Whenever a person has reached the conclusion to take his life... You are sure you have made up your mind, Miss Tanner?
Positive.
Now, if you're careful, you won't be caught.
No.
But whether you are or not, I'm giving you this check for $1,000 made out to cash to be sent to your mother only after the man is dead. I'll write his name on this pad.
There you are.
I will know what has happened by the newspapers. And I will be told payment until I learn that you have gone through with it.
It'll happen tonight.
Very well. You are sure? You are determined?
Absolutely. Nothing could stop.
Very good.
But just what would happen if I did get caught?
You won't get caught if you follow my instructions. I know. Now, here is a small revolver. It'll fit easily in your purse. That's all you need. Be sure to wipe your fingerprints off and leave the gun near the body.
Yeah. Well, goodbye, Dr. Basile.
Goodbye, Gladys. And good luck.
Professor Basile watches Gladys as she crosses the street to the dimly lighted bus stop. Then he rushes to his car and drives away. A few minutes later, he comes to a stop at Hellman's house. Hellman, the editor who ridiculed his theory.
Oh, hello, Basile.
Good evening, Hellman. Thought I'd drop out to have a little chat with you.
Well, why this time of night? And late, isn't it?
11. Didn't think that was late for you.
Oh? Come in.
Thanks.
Sit down. What's on your mind?
I want to talk to you about my theory you ridicule so definitely. My theory about suicide.
Oh. Well, I just don't believe it, that's all.
And I said I'd prove it, didn't I?
Yes, but what are you getting at?
It's going to be proved. My theory is going to be proved tonight.
Well, that's fine. Go right ahead and prove it.
I don't like you, Hellman. I'd never like you. And I know you don't like me.
I can't help that, Basile. What are you staring at?
Is there someone here with you?
Certainly not. Why?
That's a woman's purse on the Davenport.
Hmm? Oh, my secretary dropped by earlier this evening with the manuscript. She must have forgotten it.
She's not here now?
Of course not.
Then I'll continue. I found a subject. A girl who was ready to commit suicide because a man jilted her. In a few hours, I was successful in changing her thoughts from suicide to homicide, and she is going to kill the man tonight. What do you think of that?
There may be a dozen murders tonight.
Ah, but you'll know which one I mean. You'll know about this murder.
What do you mean?
Because I'm going to tell you who the victim is going to be.
You know who the intended victim is? Why don't you stop it?
But then I wouldn't have proved my theory.
If you put this girl up to it, you're as guilty as she is. You're insane, Basile. Hopelessly insane.
You think so, Emma?
The whole idea is mad. Too utterly ridiculous for words. No sane man would ever think of such a useless, senseless idea. And for heaven's sake, stop laughing.
I'm thinking about the victim. Then he learned.
Who is the victim?
Martin Hellman.
Me?
Yes, you.
I don't believe you.
You will this time.
Who is this girl? I know no girl who'd want to kill me.
This one does. Now.
Oh, nonsense. However, I wouldn't put it past you to hire someone to do something like this.
No, no, this girl is no fake. This girl is serious, deadly serious.
You probably hypnotized some poor woman, figuring she'd never remember what happened.
Oh, Herman, you underestimate me.
Maybe I do underestimate your evil mind. But believe
me...
Put
up your hands, Herman. Get away from the desk. I'll just take care of that gun, Herman. That's better.
Well, since when did you start carrying a gun, Basile?
Ah, a gun? Don't be silly. This isn't a gun in my pocket. It's just my pipe. See? Well, what do you hear, Herman?
Nothing.
Oh, yes, you do. I heard it, too. A sound on the porch. I leave now. The back way. I put your gun in the kitchen. And I'll be very careful to remove all my fingerprints.
You insane fool!
Oh, fancy you. You, Herman, you are going to help prove my theory. Good night, Herman.
Crazy devil. I'll have him locked up before he gets across town.
Good evening, Mr. Hellman.
Huh? How did you get in here?
Through the patio door.
What do you want?
I wanted to talk to you.
Very strangely.
You're just imagining things.
And what are you doing here?
I wanted to tell you something.
Yeah? What?
When you first indicated to me that you were through with me, I was terribly hurt. I thought all along that we were to be married. I couldn't understand. I tried and tried to think of something I'd done to cause our breakup. Then I happened to find this snapshot in your desk.
Snapshot?
Take a look at it. Kansas City. No, Atlantic City, New Jersey. You and a blonde. And the date is stamped on the back. A business trip. Ha!
Well, what about it?
I just wanted you to know that you weren't so slick. I wanted you to know that I knew about the blonde. But I knew you'd lied.
Now that you've told me, what good does it do you?
A lot of good.
First, I thought you came here for money.
How could you think such a thing?
Well, I think you'd better go now.
I'm going. Goodbye, Morton. And good luck in your new venture.
What venture?
This one.
Gladys! Gladys!
Wish me luck in mine.
Gladys stands staring a moment at the body of Hellman, then wipes off the gun, drops it to the floor, takes the professor's check from her purse, steps to Hellman's desk and writes a note. Then she puts the note in an envelope with the check, addresses it, stamps it, turns out the lights, and steps out into the dark street. At the corner, she drops the envelope in the mailbox and disappears. Professor Basile heard the shots. His theory worked. Hellman will torment him no more. The perfect crime. So he can go home to his wife now and go to sleep.
Myra. Myra.
Huh? What? Oh, Antonio.
What are you doing asleep on the Davenport? You know what time it is?
It must be after midnight. I've been waiting for you.
How was opera?
Oh, fair. Nothing to brag about.
Who sang the lead?
Bill Chiari. He wasn't very good.
Bill Chiari?
Mm-hmm. The poor Othello.
Othello? I thought they were doing Ida tonight.
No, they switched because someone was ill. Oh, just as soon as stayed home.
Have a night, Capmira?
No, thanks. I'm tired. I think I'll go to bed.
I belong presently. Good night.
Then the night passes and the morning comes. The professor rises cheerfully and prepares for breakfast. Then...
I get it, Myra. Yes?
Are you Professor Basile?
Yes.
May we come in? We'd like to talk with you.
Of course. What is it you want?
Is your wife in?
Yes.
We'd like to see her, too.
What?
Oh, I'm Lieutenant Davis.
detective at work.
Well, what do you want? Will you call your wife? And suddenly, Myra, but what's this all about?
What is it, Antonio?
These men are from detective headquarters. They want to talk to us.
Really? What about?
May I ask where you were last night, Mrs. Basile?
Certainly. I went to the opera.
What time did you get home?
Oh, I imagine it was around 11 or shortly after.
Mm-hmm. Were you at home last evening, Professor?
Well, I was at the club and got home about 12:30.
By the way, do you know a Morton Hellman?
Certainly.
What about him?
He's been murdered.
Murdered?
Good Lord. When?
Around midnight last night. I found him this morning.
How terrible. Why, I've known him for years. He was editor-in-chief of the company publishing my writings. I'm a psychologist, you know.
Yes, we know.
But what do you want to know from us? We weren't connected socially with Hellman. Just in business.
Did you know him, Mrs. Basile?
Yes, I knew him very slightly.
Either of you know of anyone who'd have reason to kill him?
Certainly not. Everyone thought highly of him.
Did you ever hear of a girl named Gladys Tanner?
Lady Tanner? No.
Did you know of a Gladys Tanner, Mrs. Basile?
No.
Is this your purse, Mrs. Basile?
Why, of course it is. That's the one I gave you last Christmas, Myra.
Oh, yes. I must have lost it downtown.
Where did you find it, Lieutenant?
At Hellman's home.
Hellman's home? Well, how in the world?
Good heavens, but
we found it on the sofa.
Well, I can't imagine how it could get there.
And this is the revolver that killed Hellman, found on the floor beside him.
What?
No fingerprints on it, however.
What?
May I see it? Why, Myra, this is your gun. I bought this for you 2 years ago when I went on the lecture tour.
Yes, I think it's mine, but it just doesn't make sense.
Did you have the gun in your purse when you lost it last night?
Well, I did. I'm so confused now. I can't remember.
Think. It's terrible.
Oh, I know. Oh, dear, I feel ill.
Did you ever fire this gun?
Yes, once last year up in the mountains. I wanted to see how it worked.
Ever reloaded?
No, I've never reloaded it. I just didn't think about it. Maybe I did put it in my purse. Why, I don't know. And whoever found the purse may have used the gun to... Oh, I just can't seem to think.
This gun misfired on the first two shots. The other three killed Hellman.
This is the most amazing piece of coincidence I ever heard of. Why would my wife want to do such a thing? Why should she get to Hellman? She hardly knew him.
Are you sure about that, Professor?
Of course.
Well, sorry to say that I don't believe her.
What? This is ridiculous.
This is going to be a shock to you, Professor, but here's a snapshot we found on Hellman's desk. Taken in Atlantic City last July.
Good heavens. Why? This is you, my... You and Hellman. You were at your mother's in Florida in July. Myra, look at me. What does this mean?
I can't.
And I can't believe such a thing.
May I have the purse, the gun, and the photo? Thank you. I'm sorry, but I'll have to take her down to headquarters.
But I didn't kill him. I didn't. I wouldn't. I loved him.
Myra. Better pull yourself together. You'll have to go back.
You want photos and fingerprints?
Yes. Better get it ready, Myra. Certainly looks bad for her.
Afraid it does. Looks like an open and shut case. Oh, will you come along too, Professor?
Certainly.
And so it all worked out beautifully. Not quite as the professor had planned. But then he changed his plan from the moment when Gladys Tanner showed him the snapshot taken in Atlantic City. And he realized that the girl's fiancé was Hellman, and the blonde was Myra, his wife. He had no intention of allowing Gladys Tanner to kill Hellman until he saw that snapshot. And when he recognized Myra's purse in Hellman's home, he decided to let Gladys kill him and the blame be placed on Myra. The perfect crime. But several hours later, after fingerprints and many questions, the professor is just about to be dismissed when Sergeant Rankin steps into the room and speaks quietly to Lieutenant Davis.
What is it, Rankin?
I stayed at the Seals' place, as you said.
Well?
A few minutes ago, a special delivery letter came for the professor. This'll knock your eye out. Read it.
Well, this fits perfectly with the writing we were trying to make out on Helm's death blotter. Professor, Here's a letter sent special delivery to you a few minutes ago, postmarked last night. Read it.
Dear Professor Basile, your theory worked a certain degree. You convinced me I should kill him. But when that gun you gave me misfired twice, I almost quit.
Go ahead, Professor, read on.
Then as I looked at him on the floor, the feeling of self-destruction came back. I'm going ahead with my plan. Here's your check. I won't need it. Besides, I lied to you. I lost my mother long ago. Better luck next time. That is Tanner.
And a half hour ago, they found her body beneath Suicide Bridge.
Well, Professor, your perfect crime has failed.
Failed? Yes, failed.
Wonderful setup on paper, but your theory backfired and you're up for murder.
But I didn't kill him.
But you planned it, and you're as guilty as Gladys. She's paid her penalty. Now it's your turn.
No. No. I won't. I won't be hanged. Never!
Drink and drag it!
And now the doctor lies on the sidewalk 17 stories below. His entire theory worked in reverse. So closes the Doctor Prescribed Death, starring Bela Lugosi, tonight's story of suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of February 1943 on CBS, bringing the curtain down on this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.